Hello, dear listeners. Editor JT here. After many requests and lots of planning, we're excited to announce we've officially sold out to Big T-Shirt, and Deprogram merch is now available. As we all know, you're not a real communist unless you sell products to your listeners. And friend, have we got some products for you. We collabed with some very talented designers from the community and came up with a bunch of designs we think you'll love. Whether you want a sticker for your laptop, a Chattanooga State-affiliated media hat, or Hakim's patented I'm So Tired coffee cup, we've got a little something for everyone. It's a great way to feed your crippling consumption habit and support the show while you're at it. The merch is available right now at the links below. Now, on to the show.
There's like three types of people that listen to this podcast. Number one, are people actually interested in learning more about theory, learning about the socialist cause, et cetera, et cetera. Group number two, that basically only listens to the intro and us mentioning cocks, shit, and urinals, and how to properly wash your ass. And group number three, that probably does not catch anything because they just play us in the background while they work around their kitchen, wash their dishes, or work off their sweaty backs in whatever profession that that they are
JT,
in.
JT, could you please say wash their penis, but in the Peterson voice?
No, I will not do that.
Please.
Now you have to do it.
Please.
You cannot refuse request this specific.
The evaporating emoji. Please.
You've mentioned that evaporating emoji probably the last five episodes in a row and the live stream.
I'm a boomer with this shit. I latch onto one thing. Oh, fuck.
No, I love how JT was making fun of me from getting triggered by Hakim's boomer levels, but now it's reaching even you, JT.
Well, exactly. I admit that I too am a boomer because today I was messing around trying to figure out like uploading stuff to TikTok because I'm uploading once every 2 weeks to Second Thought instead of once a week.
So. Can you hear that? Can you hear that? Can you hear that? Beautiful listeners, can you hear that? This motherfucker has given me so much shit about consuming TikTok content, about talking about TikTok content, and now he will not only become a consumer of TikTok content, he will become a TikTok creator. Arguably, even from my perspective, the bottom of the bottom, even though we had some lovely guests who are TikTok creators, but you get my fucking point. It's a joke. So basically, my two fellow co-hosts are hypocrites. Hakim, still need to find what you're a hypocrite for, but you probably don't even wash your ass properly with water every
Logical
time.
Consistency, but, boys. That's what the Nur of Islam gives you, all right? Shed on la ilaha illallah. All right. Boys, I got a few stories for you, as always. As always. I'll start with the most inspiring, and then I'll kind of gradually go through. I've gotten some great discounts on melons recently.
Nice.
Your boy is a melon fiend, if you didn't know. You know what? I go between...
He's getting melon discounts. Oh, fucking...
He's got a little coupon book.
Let me this, fucking...
Are you 78? Like, I swear to God. Am I ageist? I guess I'm ageist. Thanks to you, Hakim, I'm learning more things about myself. I have this deep hatred of old people, apparently. Sorry, please continue. Yeah.
But you love me.
I do. But that's what's so confusing. I'm like, you know, I don't know, a KKK guy's daughter that's in love with a black guy. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, I mean, there you go. I'm glad that you liken me enjoying my melon discounts
to the KKK.
To interracial hatred.
Yeah. I mean, the KKK constantly keeps talking about watermelons, so you know there's a
Jesus.
Combo there.
I mean, hey, you know what? There's some overlap, I guess. But let me tell you about these. I go between liking regular watermelon and the other shit, which I don't know what it's called in English. Cantaloupe.
Fucking I love cantaloupe.
Honeydew, mustard cantaloupe dew. Slaps. I don't fucking know what they're called. But cantaloupe does slap, actually, no, for sure. That was number one. Number two, I don't know if there's any polite way of saying this, but some guy came through into the emergency room recently, and he had, basically there was an altercation of some sort. He ended up being stabbed in the calf. Ooh. Of all places. I don't know how one stabs another person in the calf. Was he running and then he tripped and then he stabbed him? Or was the guy just very short? I don't know. Or the other guy very tall? I don't know exactly how it happens. But the guy who hit him got him twice in the calf. And then he came to us and we have to, you know, make sure that they close up, make sure there's no arterial bleed. There was an arterial bleed, so we had to stop that. But otherwise, there's something called a log roll. I'm sure anybody who's in healthcare knows what it is, but it's exactly what it sounds like. Part of, you know, your procedure, you need to flip the person on their side just to make sure that everything in the back part of the body is okay. And the second we moved this guy, I feel very bad for him. I guess he just really needed the bathroom, because the second we rolled him over, he just started shitting.
Oh my God.
I felt so bad. But do you know who I felt even worse for? The poor nurse. Because this man, he was a large man, so these were good, solid turds. Thankfully, it wasn't like too liquid, right? But
this was the man who was stabbed?
Yeah, the man who was stabbed, a completely unrelated way.
He got stabbed by a short person, and he shat all over a nurse. That's exactly a great day.
But no, hold on. Let me tell you the best part about it. This poor nurse, she had to grab it, the excrement to throw away, and right as she was going to basically wipe for him, so that we can make sure that the thing we were putting him on won't be too dirty, because he was going to be moved to the operating theater afterwards. We don't need that around. Just as she starts wiping, he starts shitting.
Well, she was holding his shit, she realizes she needs to carry more of his shit.
Yeah, exactly. And I felt very bad for the lady, and I felt bad for her for 2 seconds until the smell permeated the entire operating hall, and I was like, okay, you know what, fuck this. So I went to get the disinfectant, the hand disinfectant, and I just I don't know if this is the right word to use, but I impregnated some the cotton hand things with it. I mean, that is the proper scientific term. Fuck you, okay?
I didn't say a thing.
JT here is like, well, I'm the only one who's actually impregnated somebody here, so I feel I'm entitled. But anyways, yeah, so I filled this fucking thing with the alcohol swabbing stuff, and I just held it up to my nose the entire. So that was the second story that I had for you. The guy's fine, by the way. He went home today. Nice. He's been vibing.
I have several questions.
Please, go ahead.
The first... why did this man simply not go to the bathroom?
Because
he was stabbed.
He
by
did
a
come as an emergency. He did lose like a pint of blood. Okay. I don't know how much All a right. pint is. Hold on.
Okay.
Pint. Metric. There we go. Fuck you. One U.S. liquid pint is 0.004 cubic meter. What the fuck does that mean?
That's not helpful.
It's half a liter. Okay, liquid pint is half a liter. Yeah, so I'm not wrong. He did lose around a pint of blood.
A good bit of blood. Okay, got it.
Yeah, a decent amount of blood.
He couldn't, slapped a Band-Aid on it? He couldn't at least warned you or something? He's just...
slapped a Band-Aid on his ass? Like, where is he?
On his where he was stabbed by the child or the chicken or something. Yes.
I didn't ask the man these questions, and frankly, I felt so bad for him. Right, he already had a bad day. This guy got stabbed and shit in public in full view.
Maybe he got stabbed because he shat in public previously, and then they
possibly,
and then they took him to the fucking hospital, and he continued doing that.
Well, pour one out for shit man.
We got the homie, exactly, for the homie, for a real one.
Speaking of homies, today is the real OG homie day. It's International Women's Day, so let's say something nice about the females, the females, the womanoids.
They gave birth to all of us.
Exactly, 33% of our listeners. Yeah.
Is it really? Oh wow, that's very nice to hear.
Yeah, yeah.
Alhamdulillah. You know, when I started, at least I can speak for my channel, when I look at it, it's always like 10-15% female viewership, which is, all right, that's pretty cool. But at sometimes, I remember very early on, it was like 98% male. Yeah. I'm like, all right, cool. But also, why?
Yeah.
I get the feeling that my shit must be boring, if that's the case, but whatever. So, alhamdulillah. You want everybody to thank all the women in your lives?
Yeah. Call your mothers, mom. Give her a hug.
Yeah, exactly. Your spouses or partners. All right. Your kids, if you have them.
Yeah.
And try to treat them with respect for the other 364 days as well, and not only today.
Yeah, exactly right. Do some housework.
No. Fuck that. Fuck that.
Oh, geez. Dude, do you know what? This is such fucking nonsense. Everybody who speaks with me, they drop the usual nonsense like, oh, you like, you know, when you go home, your mom takes care. Bullshit. Do you know when I go home? Mm. Do you know my mom has since I was maybe 13 years old, my mom hasn't cooked me a fucking meal. She'll tell me to go over to her to visit them, and I'll show up, and she's like, you want to make some food? So I'll be fucking cooking for them. Bullshit.
Oh, holy shit.
Dude, I've been doing chores at home since I was like, what, maybe 8 or 9 years old? Mm. All the chores at home. Mm. I did laundry. I cleaned the fuck. I did everything. My mom had me as a slave, basically. Alhamdulillah, I don't mind. You know,
she did.
She worked plenty. So.
International Women's Day, except for Hakim's mom.
Put her on all the posters, like inspiration. Oh, fuck them kids. Exactly. They're going to cook for me, motherfucker.
I have one more story for you boys, okay? So, like around a month ago, we had a patient. By the way, I'm on rotations, basically, so that's why I'm in many different departments at this current period. But anyway, so this one guy had come, and he, I don't know, maybe it was attempted suicide, maybe he fell out of a window. I don't know exactly what happened, but he fell out of the sixth floor, basically.
Wow.
And he messes shit up, unsurprisingly, as one does when they fall out of the sixth floor. So he didn't die, but he was all sort of messed up. He has fractures all over his back and his legs. An absolute mess. He was basically out of it for like 3 weeks. He wouldn't wake up. Then afterwards, he woke up a bit, but he couldn't speak. He had issues with his swallowing, amongst many other things. We operated on his legs and all that kind of stuff. But the general idea or belief is that he's not going to be able to walk again. That was the thing, and I had to go and break it to him and his family. So it was really depressing. This guy, not 20 minutes after, but by the way, keep telling, like, try to move, try to, you know, let's see what you can, mm-hmm. let's see what function you still have left. But he's weak and tired and, of course, all that kind of stuff. But 20 minutes after I go to this guy and I tell him, hey, you know, you're probably not going to walk anymore. Neuro rehab, they don't want to even look at you because they think you're like a lost cause, wow. basically. All that kind of stuff. 20 minutes after this, I say this to this guy, he starts wiggling his fucking toes and his legs and shit. I'm like, oh, let's fucking go. Let's go.
Yeah.
So that was, that's it was awesome. Very, very uplifting. It was the first time in my life. Actually, it felt like a movie in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because it really did feel like the low point, and then all of a sudden, this dude made his comeback, and everybody in the ward like started celebrating. It was very nice.
Aww.
Like the nurses and doctors, everybody's like, "Let's go!" So yeah, and like day after day, he's improving. Alhamdulillah.
That's awesome.
It's to the point that even neuro rehab was like, "This guy's a lost cause."
Wow.
We called them as like, "You motherfuckers, you need to come down. You need to come take a look. You need to come down here." And then they came and they took a look and was like, "Okay, we'll take him. We'll take." I was like, all right, our work is done.
Yes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to yet another installment of arguably the most original online politics show out there. Send nudes. I mean, send news. I have done this joke 11 times now, and regular listeners have probably heard it for 11 times now. And it's still, honestly, not boring for me. If it's boring for you, then fuck you. But who do I not fuck? Unless they want me to, of course. Our beautiful, lovely patrons, without whom this show would
like, where's he going with this?
without whom this show would not be able to run. Thank you for supporting us, and for those of you considering potentially supporting the show and keeping it as independent as possible, please check out some of the links below. So, with that being said, let's take it for a spin with the first story of the previous month. JT, go on.
Please keep that.
Bless you.
Please keep all that.
Thank you. All right. Well, our first tidbit of news here is one that I've actually been working on myself for the last month or so. If you are listening to this on the day it goes up for patrons, there is a brand new video, or there should be a brand new video on my channel about the East Palestine, Ohio train derailment. It's my longest video ever. It's about 40 minutes long, something like that. Please go watch it. Please put a lot of work into it. But TLDR, February 3rd, I believe, a train carrying vinyl chloride and other dangerous chemicals derailed in a small town in Ohio. And this caused some concern in the local population, obviously, because there were these chemicals leaching out into the ground. And so what happened was there was a risk of these train cars exploding because there was a fire and it was heating up the inside of these pressurized cars. So what first responders ended up doing was blowing some small holes in some of these cars, draining the chemicals into a ditch, basically on the side of the tracks, and then lighting that on fire in what's called a controlled burn. And so that's where you saw all of these photos of this massive black plume of smoke coming up from these burning train cars. And that released all of these toxic chemicals not only into the ground, into the water, but also into the air. And this plume traveled many, many miles towards Pittsburgh, I believe, was the direction the wind was carrying it. But it also ended up over parts of Canada. And these 5,000 people were kind of left in the dark here because Norfolk Southern, the people who owned the train and the chemicals aboard it, weren't really forthcoming with information about how exactly this had happened, what the extent of the danger was. So I was there in East Palestine for a few days, and we went to a town hall where they had Aaron Brockovich, who's a professional agitator, a professional environmental activist, and she gave a rousing speech to the locals, and then handed it off to a lawyer guy who pitched his law services, and a water expert who has basically said that never in his entire career has he seen a community where there is zero protection from chemicals leaching into the water table and the water that is used to and distributed to community members. So these people are frankly kind of screwed. They are facing a many decades long uphill battle, both a legal battle and a health battle, legal with Norfolk Southern, because this has happened many times before on their watch, and they have the money. Mm. It's built into their
it's
operating.
It's happened again since,
yeah.
By the way.
Oh, yeah, just the other day, and multiple times since. Mm. This is the type of thing where it's, unless you break the system that allows this kind of thing to happen, unless you nationalize the rail industry, for example, that would be a step in the right direction, then these things are going to continue to happen because it's always going to be cheaper to ignore the problems and pay whatever little slap on the wrist fine you get than to invest, you know, a couple billion dollars in rail safety, personnel, things like that. So that's what's been going on in East Palestine for the past month. It's something to it's worth keeping your eyes on because it is fairly indicative of the state of the rest of the rail industry in the United States. At least we see like 1,000 derailments a year. This is just one of the more news making ones. But this is a problem that we faced for a long time and will continue to face for as long as capitalism is allowed to continue here.
Hold on, but the market will find a solution. isn't that the case, JT? Please tell me that the market will find a solution.
I regret to announce that in this particular case, the market will not find a solution. RIP.
Oh no!
This is some filthy commie talk if I've ever heard it. Yeah. You know, this is
a little sus.
Guys, I'm not sure, but I think second thought might be a tanky.
Oh no! No,
I'm kidding. Sorry.
Piece of shit.
This is stupid. I'm so sorry.
Red Fash tanky.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Red
Corporal
Fash.
Corporate authoritarian.
You think they should have clean drinking water? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Of course the market, we need to have a market solution which will incorporate the shareholders.
5,000 of you may die, but that is a price I am willing to pay.
Sorry, you go up, Nick, please. Hit us with another with some hard hitting journalism.
I love how this is going to be a train episode, because tens of thousands of people took to the streets of Greece on this Wednesday, previous Wednesday, and workers went on strike in the biggest show of public anger yet over the country's deadliest train disaster of all time, actually, that killed over 57 people last week. The crash was on February 28th, and it has stirred public outrage over the crumbling state of the rail network. So it's not only USA. Striking workers say years of neglect, underinvestment, and understaffing, a legacy of Greece's decade-long debt crisis, are to blame in the largest street protest the government has faced since being elected in 2019. Police estimated more than 60,000 people, which realistically is most likely more than 100,000 people. Mm-hmm. Among them, transport workers, students, and teachers took part in demonstrations in cities all across Greece. Thousands also took to the streets in Greece's second biggest city, Thessaloniki, where a group of protesters protesters hurled stones and fucked up some of the police cordons and so on. Many of the around 350 people aboard that intercity passenger train that collided head-on with a freight train head-on while traveling on the same track were university students heading north to Thessaloniki from Athens. Message me when you get there was a placard held up by many of the students in Athens, echoing what has become one of the slogans of the protests over the past week, because sadly enough, many of them received this message over and over again from their mothers and fathers who would later never see their children again. Rail workers had already been staging rolling strikes since Thursday, bringing the network basically to a halt. There's almost no trains moving through Greece at this point. They say their demands for improvement in safety protocols have gone unheard for years and years, and have promised to impose safety to ensure that the crash will not, the promises that they will impose safety so that crashes like this do not repeat is too late. To quote, we drivers have filed complaints about these things. We have gone on strike about it. We have made warnings. We have protested. And yet nothing, said the union leader Kostas back on Monday. They told us we were lying. We were slanderous. We had other interests. In the end, it showed that the worker was right. It is just sad it had to take so many lives for us to prove our point. Greece's largest public sector union joined Wednesday's 24-hour strike. City transport workers walked off the job in solidarity. The metro didn't work. The tram didn't work. The bus didn't work in the capital. Ships also remained docked at ports as seamen participated in the action. To quote, it's not the time to fall silent. The government, whose term expires in July, has obviously blamed it on 100 reasons, except the main one that JT previously mentioned and the other train tragedy literally across the globe, which is that the market does not do anything good for infrastructure, because infrastructure being fixed literally costs less than them dealing with the lawsuits of something breaking, something falling, something exploding, something leaking, or kids not getting to their fucking classes, but not from the form of being late to them, but literally being buried into the ground. So when people say, you know, when it's a bit too deep for them and they don't want to philosophize about, you know, how the market is killing, you know, the 20 million starving motherfuckers over there, or the 50 million, you know, dying in this or that conflict, then show them examples like this that are very physical and very in your face, where the complete abandonment of anything human when it comes to how we manage our societies leads to direct death of fucking kids. If that's not proof enough to you that the market kills, then a capitalist market kills, then I don't know what can fucking wake you up. You're a lost cause.
Very, very beautifully said. Let's raise some spirits a little bit, I guess, and to juxtapose that.
But tell me it's a train. Tell me it's a good train story.
Okay, it is train related.
Oh, wow, really?
You know, tangentially. Yeah, nice. a little bit. But okay. Well, so recently, the Macroni government of France has tried to, or has been very, they're hard in pushing their new pension reform, which includes, amongst other many stupid changes, raising the retirement age to 64. Because, of course, that's what you want when you want to retire, right? That every single year, retirement just crawls away a bit more forward.
Imagine so you're like that age, right, when it's supposed to happen, and then it jumps by 3 years. And then you get to it in 3 years, and then it jumps again. Fucking hell.
Yeah, but that's basically what's been happening all across Europe and the world in general, aside from places where people actually stand up and protest, which is what's exactly happening in France right now. There have been for several days now, and also this is in connection to protests that have happened earlier this month and last month as well, almost 1.3 million people in France have came out to basically bring France entirely to a halt. Nationwide strike. It involves, think of an industry, it involves it. But one of the biggest ones that took part as well was the major rail networks and train services, which basically either in some places they stopped running entirely, in other cases they stopped taking fares, but they still ran depending on which area we're discussing. Schools were shut down. Fuel deliveries were even stopped, which is beyond based, by the way. This is amazing. And basically, as a result, the French government has decided to do an entire U-turn, which, by the way, I love, supposedly, and this is the thing that people need to realize, the ideology at the background of this. Whenever anybody tells you that there's such a thing as democracy in North America or Western Europe, this is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of people in voting, polling, and whatnot, have mentioned that they don't want the retirement age to go up. Number one. Number two, they've made their voices heard by taking to the streets. And the quote-unquote democratic system within France has set basically police and like riot police and militarized police on these people, trying to contain them, number one. Number two, had tried to fight tooth and nail before they finally acquiesced to saying, all right, we'll do a U-turn on this policy. We'll try again in the future, which is the death knell of social democracy, of course. But this is what you need to remember when anybody tells you that, oh yeah, we need to be a social democracy like France or Norway or whatever. This is exactly what happens. The vast majority of interests of the working class are not represented by bourgeois democracies like France, like Canada, like any other country that you can think of. And this is a perfect example of this. My favorite, of course, representation of these protests, usually when they happen in France, is they never just show the like large groups of people with their flags and their placards and whatnot. Yeah. They always show the one little trash can that's burning and the next to the riot police, just to reinforce, like, oh, you know, how much of a mess it is. These fucking, the mob is taking control.
Hey, beautiful Paris being destroyed by these peasants.
Oh, I wish. but do you know my favorite part? My favorite part about this is in a lot of the articles that discuss this, they mentioned the quote-unquote hard left CGT union. That's the General Confederation of Labor of France, which is a fairly large union. It was founded in the end of the 1800s, and it's a huge union as well, with nearly a million members. They call it the quote-unquote hard left because, I don't know, like in 1946, they were connected to the French Communist Party. Right now, they're basically like lukewarm social democrats, from what I've seen at least. And they have like a lot of good trade unionism stuff, but for the most part, they're still social democratic in their outlook. But I love how that's hard left, of course, the overtime window keeps shifting. Yeah. But my favorite part about it is the head of this union is a guy named Philippe Martinez. And this boy, my God, he has a mustache to rival Uncle Joe's. Yes. The good Uncle Joe. I'm going to send a picture to the boys. Just take a look at this guy's mustache.
Look at that.
Philippe Martinez, pause and take a look at this dude's mustache. This guy, imagine him giving you a big old smooch.
That's proper. That's like an actual walrus mustache. I love that. Oh, man.
That is so difficult to pull off, and not only to pull off, but to actually grow.
Yeah.
But by the way, I'm just going to say, this guy, I don't know his politics, so I don't know if we're going to support him. The little that I've read about him, he seems pretty based. He supports a fairly high minimum wage in France, a 32-hour work week, some like job creation policies that seems semi-reasonable, and of course the 60-year retirement age, amongst other things. So that's this guy. I don't know if he's based otherwise.
Regardless,
or not. Into it too deep.
Uncritical support for his mustache. That's all that really matters.
Exactly right. There we go. Yeah. And by the way, all these fucking articles, all they talk about is like, oh, but the reform plan isn't going to be any good. Oh, we're going to, the pension funds will run out of money. I'm like, okay, here's a question. I don't know if they even thought about it, but hypothetically, how about you kind of just a little bit dip into the corporate profits that have been fucking record high for the past like 6 or 8 years, year after year. Maybe that could possibly fix the pension, you know. Nah, better yet, nationalize everything. Fuck. But anyways. I'll get off my soapbox about that. I think it's fairly clear where we lean on the nationalization question, boys. And of course, it's a moderate nationalization of through corporations, of course, in which we maintain the market as the sole determiner
No, you just call a guy in the Central Committee Market. You change his name legally, and it's basically exactly. under European Union definition of democracy. It's a market economy, so it's still democratic.
Exactly right. Yeah, the AI that will basically plan the will manage the planning mechanisms will be called market.
Yeah, and it's like grows to consciousness, and it is like, but gentlemen, why did you name me? Why did you create me one of the most efficient central planning systems, and yet you named me as one of the least efficient planning systems, the market? It's like confused by the offensive name it has been given.
Poor little robot. Okay, next, let's talk about Ukraine. Biden administration sends another $2 billion in military funding to Ukraine, bringing the running total to over $30 billion, all to advance U.S. geopolitical goals in the region at the cost of countless lives. And what I wanted to do...
No, but Ukrainian freedom. Hey, please. people who couldn't point out Ukraine on a map 3 weeks ago now are all about Slava Ukraini, guys. Please, we need to Slava Ukraini.
Jesus Christ. All you have to do is say freedom. That's literally all you have to do to get Americans on your side is say freedom. It's so frustrating.
Do you like orcs? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Right. Let me read a bit of this this press release from February 24th, 2023, from the U.S. Department of Defense. 1 year ago today, Russia launched an unprovoked and indefensible full-scale invasion of its peaceful and democratic neighbor, Ukraine. 1 year on, the commitment of the United States, together with some 50 countries who have rallied to rush urgently needed assistance to Ukraine, has only strengthened. Today, the Department of Defense is announcing a new security assistance package to reaffirm the steadfast support of the United States for Ukraine's brave defenders and strengthen Ukraine's air defenses. This package, which totals $2 billion, is being provided under the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative, as part of our commitment to Ukraine's long-term security. Specifically, the United States is committing additional unmanned aerial systems and counter UAS and electronic warfare detection equipment, as well as critical ammunition stocks for artillery and precision fire capabilities that will bolster Ukraine's ability to repel Russian aggression. Then it lists a bunch of very scary-sounding military equipment, including the Switchblade 600 UAS.
My favorite COD map.
The United States will continue to work with its allies and partners to provide Ukraine with capabilities to meet its immediate battlefield needs and longer-term security assistance requirements for as long as it takes.
But willing to fight until the last Ukrainian.
Exactly. This whole thing is just full of those buzzwords. Like, I mean, think what you want about Russia. Like, obviously, it's an oligarchy. It's you know, very, very bad guys. But, like, Russia launched an unprovoked full-scale invasion of its peaceful and democratic neighbor, Ukraine. Like, there's...
Oh, yes, of course.
How they become democratic.
Words don't have meanings anymore, guys. Please. All right. A literal a color revolution coup in Ukraine.
it's exhausting because you get the same propaganda all the time. And finally, people, at least a little bit, are starting to see through it. But $2 billion to blow up, you know, civilians in that region of the world versus $0 for what we just talked about, East Palestine. Like, you had Trump go and he brought water bottles. I was like, people are like, oh, that's nice. And then it turns out the water bottles are 12 years expired. Like, how do you find 12-year-old water just sitting in a warehouse somewhere? Someone was saying it was Trump branded water bottles that he just didn't know what to do with. It's like,
Lamau. Oh my God. He could have just rebottled it. He could have done it himself. I don't think it would have taken that long. I mean,
I know. It's, I don't want anyone to accuse us of supporting Russia or whatever, or, you know, picking sides in this. We don't need to be sending billions and billions of dollars to fund just brutal meat grinder warfare that benefits none of the working class in Ukraine or Russia or any of that region. All it's trying to do is destabilize the region to advance U.S. and NATO geopolitical interests. Mm-hmm. And it's a lose-lose situation for the combatants.
Your mistake there is thinking that they want to benefit the working classes.
Lamau.
Honestly, it's a mess. The entire war is... anybody who thinks it's unprovoked is an idiot.
Yeah.
Anybody who tries to justify it on the other end as well is kind of, you know... like
a little sus.
There's a lot of nuance to discuss. Yeah, there's a lot of nuance to this discussion. The most important point of this entirely is and I know I'm a broken record on this, but the greatest geopolitical disaster of the past century, if not the past like 500 years probably, has been the illegal dissolution of the Soviet Union, yeah, which has resulted in brother next to brother picking up guns and destroying basically what was left over Soviet infrastructure to begin with, because no new construction had been going on in Ukraine either. And now you're damning this country to be basically another frozen conflict mess with no utilities, no education, no healthcare, no nothing. So at best, it's going to be another source of cheap labor and cheap resources, mineral resources and other natural resources for Western Europe and North America, as well as basically stoking the geopolitical fires and maintaining a little vassal state, yeah, in the area.
Exactly. And an easy way to launder a shit ton of money and create, yeah, quote unquote, a shit ton of jobs whenever Ukraine needs to be rebuilt. I mean, they're going to put so much fucking cash in this shit. It's going to be absolutely unbelievable. But like the whole conflict, relatively similar to the Yugoslav conflicts, but you know, this one happened after the development of capitalism for, you know, pretty much three decades in both of these states. It's like a new type of genre. It's not just post-apocalyptic, it's post-post-apocalyptic, because you know, the life in a post-socialist world, I mean, I know I live in it, is it feels very much like you're, you know, when you walk down the street and you see certain monuments, you see certain buildings, you see some leftover placards that nobody, you know, remembered to remove yet and replace with, you know, some stupid capitalist or pro-fascist historical slogan, you feel like you're just existing in a place that is wrapped in different memories of a bygone era when we attempted to do something more than just build bigger and bigger malls and buy flashier and flashier jeans. But now when you have a direct war where these post-apocalyptic states, to an extent, are mowing each other down, people with extremely similar culture, people who quite literally coexisted in one of the greatest and biggest internationalist projects of all time, mowing down every single brick that those evil Soviets back in the day created, leads to again this post-apocalyptic world where you no longer even will be able to walk through the streets and see something reminiscent of a more inspired, let's use that word, a more inspired time, because it will all be leveled and then replaced with whatever fucking side wins their shiny little glass buildings, where they will, you know, input their little private businesses in order to stimulate the groups that we all know get stimulated mostly from this. Speaking of which, I can directly loop this into kind of the next topic of conversation. Is the biggest battle currently going on there is obviously in Bakhmut. The Ukrainians are currently being surrounded by the private military company Wagner, but you can pronounce it Wagner, whatever way
Wagner,
whatever way you want to pronounce it. But you can read more than enough about the current situation on the front from many sources online. TLDR is that it's a literal meat churner, you know, troops just being thrown in by both sides, and we currently do not know exactly how many people are dying on the daily, but many estimates that I've read and listened to directly from be it majors and officers from both sides, the running joke there, the dark joke, like they always exist on the front, is, you know, the average lifespan on the front is around 4 to 5 hours. And I've heard that both sides kind of state a similar thing. But what's more interesting is that this private military corporation, which obviously most people know utilizes violent criminals who are given amnesty post participation, as well as professional soldiers who want to make some extra money and don't want to be hurled with the standard troops, something that absolutely exists on the Ukrainian side as well. Only there they're termed as freedom fighters or volunteer groups, etc., etc. Okay, volunteer groups with 6-7K euro salaries. Okay, that sounds like I want to be a fucking volunteer then for that money. But it brings us to an interesting conversation about the future of war and of the participation of quite literal corporations, which Wagner is literally that. You're creating private armies which can be utilized for the particular purpose of war, and how like the specific conflict when it comes to the capability of Russian forces and then Russian private military forces, you can see the market that I guess is the main topic of this episode playing a very vital part, because unironically the ones that are more cutthroat, which is obviously the private corporation when it comes to both their soldiers and enemy soldiers, the one who has more funding because again, it is private, and the one who has basically, as ironic as it is, sometimes more know-how about how to get shit done, even in the field of military battles, is shifting towards the private so-called enterprise. Obviously, we've seen military contractors in many a war ever since like the 80s, but we've never seen something that a private military force that is, you know, quite literally the main driving nail at the head of the military strategy of a particular republic, in this case in the Russian Federation. So it's going to be interesting to see, obviously not really interesting, it's going to be very fucked up to see many other countries applying the same policy when it comes to creating and utilizing state-sanctioned military contractors, because if Wagner is a kind of a case study, it shows that it can be very, very, very successful.
I will note one thing as well, is that, yes, they play a very large part, but it's not the first war that we see them play almost a decisive role. The Iraq invasion,
yep,
at first was mostly American troops, yep, but then afterwards was Blackwater, which was a private military company, like basically contract workers. Essentially, if you want to even call it that, contract war criminals, basically. Of which, by the way, nobody was convicted for their war crimes. They were all pardoned later, but yeah.
Yeah, the difference being, but these are like first-line soldiers that are, you know, entering the territory first, while private military corporations in the past have mostly been used, quite as you said, as murderers locally to quote-unquote pacify the population and to do the the post-invasion dirty work. But now they're the invaders as well. So can you imagine when they're also the invaders and the dirty work afterwards, and then the occupation force, and then at one point they tell the quote-unquote country they work for, when they tell them, you know, you got to pull out, they tell them, fuck no, we're
in
staying.
Charge now. Yeah.
And then, you know, the snowball effect.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this kind of develops, because it makes perfect sense under capitalism that eventually the expense of maintaining a national military will become fat that needs to be trimmed. It'll be cheaper to maintain or to contract it out. But like Hakeem was saying, Blackwater, which is now Academy, it's gone by a few names, has played a major and important role in previous wars and occupations, in that the U.S. has plausible deniability when it comes to war crimes. And we've seen that these Blackwater operatives have committed atrocious war crimes against civilians, and they get pardoned every time. So it's a very easy way to pursue certain goals in a region without saying, you know, we explicitly condone this as the United States of America. It's more like, well, these are private companies. They, you know, they'll do their own thing. And you know, we hire them to help with us, but we don't really have a complete control over them. Yeah. So it's an easy way to kind of shift the blame. But like Ugovnik was saying, it's, you know, what happens when they become the occupying force, the invading force, the main group that facilitates the either a toppling of a government or tries to install themselves as the new power in the region. There's a lot of that coming down the pipe, I think, And that's going to be bad news.
It's obviously speculation, but even now, in this obvious, like, PMC Wagner is nowhere even close as powerful or wealthy as the, you know, Ministry of Defense of the Russian Federation. But even now, because of their direct successes, kind of overshadowing those of regular Russian troops to an extent, we are having, like, face-to-face conflicts between generals of the Russian Federation and the PMC, where, you know, they're trying to limit how much ammo these guys get. They're trying to limit how much, like, equipment they get so that, you know, they slow down in their advancement. So it's literally a very weird and, I'm sorry, but kind of funny, like, infighting between, you know, the private hand and the so-called government people's hand, even though we all know who it belongs to in a capitalist state. We'll see the developments, not only in this conflict, but probably the future dystopia that we will be walking. But I don't see, as you put perfectly, like, it's the way the fucking market works. If they prove their success in one war, second war, third war, fifth war, quote unquote success, you know what I mean? They're just, their growth is quite literally has immeasurable potential, financial.
Speaking of military contractors and the Iraq war and all that, this leads into beautifully. Basically a couple of days ago, there was an unannounced trip by the U.S. Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. He made this trip to Iraq. Of course, unwelcome and unannounced. Only welcomed by the traitors.
Did you go take a photo with him? Did you go like, clap? Like wave a little flaggy?
If I could get close enough... All right, but anyways, he showed up unannounced to basically declare to the world that the United States will basically maintain a military presence in Iraq, or to reaffirm that the United States will maintain a military presence in Iraq. The official, numbers right now is something like 3,000 soldiers in Iraq. The actual level is probably a lot higher than this, but currently they believe it's around 3,000. There's around 1,000 also in Syria. And my favorite bit about it is in the official statement, he said that the U.S. forces are ready to remain in Iraq at the invitation of the government of Iraq, which I find very funny because when you have a puppet state, basically... and you can basically dictate what they can say, you know? That's like the Americans going and be like, well, at the behest of the Somoza dictatorship, we can, right? We'll maintain a military presence in Central America. It's so fucking pointless. And of course, the cucks in power in Iraq, they all came out in droves to be like, oh, we want to strengthen and broaden our partnership in support of the fucking American forces, all keenness to strengthen and consolidate relations with the United States, all this absolute garbage. And my favorite part about this is the package that they're trying to sell is that this is supposed to be fighting ISIS still, which is a spent force basically in the region completely. And the image that they use... for this, for some reason, is like a bad edit of like ISIS fighters, but they're on top of a building in like Chicago or something.
Wow!
And they're trying to be like, oh, like, you know, U.S. troops staying in Iraq will prevent ISIS from taking over the U.S. Oh, yes, this group of like 2,000 people. it's fucking.
If they
ridiculous.
Leave that like picture, remember that picture of like a Soviet soldier shaking hands with an ISIS fighter
exactly.
in front of a burning White House. That is what is going to happen.
But yeah, no, there's nothing else aside from my unrepentant anger that I can say about this particular bit of news. So you guys,
but do you know any people like acquaintances and so on? We all have cringe acquaintances that are like actual members of these parties or like actual supporters of these parties. Et cetera.
Yeah. Oh my god, dude.
How do they explain it to themselves?
I have a cousin.
I always wonder.
I have a cousin who is what's it called? Like, is a bureaucratic worker for. Everything American government in Iraq.
Wow.
So basically, whenever an American soldier or an American fucking diplomat or another shows up in Iraq, this particular cousin is the one that does all their paperwork and makes sure that everything's like taken care of so they can be quote unquote legally here and all this kind of stuff. And I just remember the story. I mean, they are my cousin, but they do support the Americans, so I'm so about it. But I remember in 2004, there was a woman on a street who was known to be a translator. Secretly translated for the Americans when they first came in, and this woman I think didn't last 2 weeks before.
Wow.
And I don't know if I feel, you know, actually keep bleeping, but yeah. Moving on, JT, you can go into another one, please.
All right.
Before I get us taken off the fucking platform.
All right. Speaking of getting us taken off the platform. Let's talk about apartheid. Israeli settlers conduct pogroms on Palestinians. So at the end of February, a bunch of Israeli settlers, this was not their military, this was a bunch of dudes from like Ohio and stuff, who were occupying the area, went into a Palestinian town and carried out what many people have called a pogrom.
I'm sorry, but please stop. You said like a bunch of guys from Ohio, probably from East Palestine.
Oh, my God.
Because of the fucking leak went to actual Palestina. And then, sorry, that just clicked to claim their land.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yes. Oh, my God. Anyway.
I mean, you've seen that. You've seen the video, right, of the guy that some Brooklyn fucking...
If I don't take it, someone else will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If I don't steal it, somebody else will. I was like, it's like, you're going to have to stand before your Lord and my Lord, and you're going to have to justify what you just said, my guy. Yeah, I mean, you have no...
Surely you hear yourself when you say things like this. It's like, these people have lived here for generations. This is the home that their great-great-grandfather built. And you're coming in from, what, Scranton? and you're just like, this is mine now.
From Long Island.
Yeah, from Long Island.
Like, there's no Duncan here. I don't know.
Christ. Anyway, a bunch of settlers got a little rowdy, to say the least, and burned a bunch of buildings, killed some animals, killed one Palestinian.
Boys being boys.
Yeah, God. Threw stones at people, broke Palestinian cars.
Murdered people. They actually killed one person.
They murdered someone, and almost 100 others were injured. And 2 days later, no one was still held. None of these settlers were still held for these crimes that they committed. Yeah. Now, the IDF spoke to the settlers very sternly. So, you can't go around and do this. But here's the thing. If your government is saying things like, we want a Jewish ethnostate, if they are stating that explicitly, and they say things like, we don't want vigilante violence or anything, what do you expect to happen when you say that to your citizens all the time? It's absolutely going to cause vigilante violence. It's the same thing we're seeing in places like the United States, where you have like Tucker Carlson and all the rest talking about groomers, the groomer panic. You know, these gay people they're recruiting, so they deserve to be exterminated. But don't go and exterminate them. We're just saying, you know, hypothetically, if you were to go beat them up, that would probably be good and protecting the children. So this is stochastic terrorism. It's where you cannot explicitly state that there is a connection there, but it is very likely to happen.
There's also explicit clear terrorism on the part of the legal military settlers.
Absolutely, 100%.
But sorry, go on.
No, you're 100% right. Like this, there's no defending the entire project there. It is blatantly genocidal, and it's blatantly apartheid. But like in this instance, where we're starting to see the settlers themselves take these actions of hate and violence a little bit further and start actually burning buildings and start killing Palestinians.
Imagine how empowered you must feel.
Yeah,
in order for you to feel like there will be no retaliation.
Consequences.
No consequences because you are living in a place that wants that to happen.
Not only this, when your prime minister comes out and says, yes, go, go fucking settle and steal and do all this and murder and kill and rape and do all this, and I will make sure personally that nothing happens to you. When your own prime minister tells you this.
Yeah.
Right.
And when you do it, like, just, you know, ignore us when we go out on television and talk to all the fucking normies about, this vigilante stuff, it's bad. You shouldn't do it. Just ignore that. That's how we're covering our asses. But, man, go out there and enjoy yourself.
Nothing will encapsulate this better than the actual like subheader on an article from the Times of Israel. More like is not real. Lamel. Fucking. You have to make light of it. Otherwise, you either just get sad or angry. Yeah. But the actual subheader is some military cunt who oversees the West Bank. And he says that he warns of future clashes that could end up in Israeli fatalities.
Oh, my God.
That's his concern. That's his, exactly. There could possibly, God forbid, an Israeli
person. One of the settlers might stub their toe on the way into, you know. But anyway, to wrap this piece up, these settlers have not stopped. They have not been calmed by officials of the Israeli regime. Instead, they are saying, we're going to do this again. This is, we need to go and destroy this town and wipe it off the face of the earth. We do not intend to stop. So I think, please, like, talk to your liberal friends and stuff and show them what's happening here, because this is kind of a litmus test of are you a decent person or are you a hypocrite? Like, if you want to talk about human rights, let's start there.
And I think something also important to notice is that whenever any online, discussion about the Zionist, the illegal Zionist settler colonial military occupation of Palestine, there will undoubtedly be a flood of these, you can call them trolls, you can call them whatever you like, but the Israeli government, the Zionist government, specifically pays people and has entire legions of people sitting at computers, and all they fucking do all day is to look up any potentially either anti-Israeli sentiment or point, or anti-Zionist more like, or any pro-Palestinian point. And then they just start bullshit. They just start, you know, the fucking Gish galloping and all that kind of stuff. You can notice them usually because of bad grammar and horribly outdated memes, because these people are basically paid minimum wage, so they don't work very hard, and they all have the same talking points. But any single time you mention anything related to Israel, they immediately pop up. And if you doubt me, join any thread anywhere and just mention something even lightly critical of Israel and just wait for them to come. So that's why you also need to remember that there's a lot of artificial or astroturfed quote-unquote pro-Israeli sentiment. Because if you actually go and take a look into it, the vast majority is very heavily pro-Palestinian.
Yeah.
That's what's organic.
Speaking of massive death, a story
this
that...
This is a heavy episode, Jesus Christ.
A story that we cannot do without, unfortunately, from a similar part of the world, kind of right at the border between Hakim's world and my world. The death toll from the devastating earthquakes in Turkey and Syria has now surpassed 46,000.
Wow.
And thousands of people are still missing. Social media feeds are awash with examples of newly built residential complexes that have collapsed like sandcastles, burying occupants under the rubble. Many of these buildings were sold as luxury housing, compliant with the latest earthquake safety standards. Some of the contractors responsible have tried to flee Turkey. Over 130 people have been arrested over alleged breaches of safety codes, and several construction company owners have also been put behind bars. Turkey's Justice Minister Bekir vowed that all those who are at fault will be held accountable. How about you doing your fucking job and this not fucking happening? But this kind of greed and blatant profiteering are not just solitary crimes. These residential complexes could not have been built without state-issued building permits and licenses, without the approving signatures of nominally independent building inspectors, and without the necessary report from laboratories doing quality control of construction materials. Turkey has a fucking earthquake tax where people pay money so that they can sleep well whenever the ground chooses to fucking shake all of a sudden without thinking that they're going to fall into the ground, because all those tax dollars that they've given were supposed to go into the fucking cement that needs to keep them alive. But continuing... most people could not have gone ahead without the government's many changes to construction and real estate legislation in order to build the buildings that we've seen were collapsing like a deck of cards, like a tower of cards, all meant to facilitate the bloated growth of a destructive and insatiable construction sector. The government has left its responsibility to ensure safe and regulated construction to the forces of the market. Building inspections have been privatized, quite literally, prioritizing profit over expertise. Contractors not given to pangs of conscience, and the engineers willing to work for peanuts make inspections nothing more than a formality. This constant cutting of corners has led to an increase of illegally built and unsafe buildings. It's a deadly race to the bottom. Long-term unemployed engineers and architects have begun to hire out their university diplomas to the highest bidders, often subcontractors who want to cut through the red tape and cheaply finalize construction projects without the obstacle of an expert opinion. it would be a cliche for me to repeat something that we've said like 100 times in this fucking episode, but the free market does not lead to better production. It does not lead, in this case, to better construction. It does not lead to a competition of, man, obviously the construction company that builds nicer and flashier buildings is going to outdo the other one. But how do you think it can afford to build nicer and flashier buildings while outcompeting the price of the other one? By fucking cutting corners. And imagine if, like, this is a country that like still has some relative legislature and, you know, has inspectors and so on and so on. Imagine if the few, like, in a town of a million, you know, maybe you have like 50 inspectors that are chill, non-corrupt motherfuckers. Imagine what would have happened if you don't even have those 50. If you had, like, you know, the libertarian dream of the free market, we wouldn't be able to build fucking mud huts. No, sorry, we would build like insanely tall, beautiful, flashy, golden mud huts that, like, the second you sign the contract and move in, you fall into your fucking neighbor's toilet because the fucking floor is made out of sticks. It's 46 lives lost because we thought it would make sense that the wealthy making themselves wealthier by building buildings in which they will never live made sense.
Absolutely ridiculous. It basically just reinforces this nonsense that whenever the market comes into something, it will try to find the cheapest possible way to do it, just like Igopnik said. What annoys me is that there's all this ideology in front of it that people have realized, that everybody's internalized this. It's like, oh, but if you go private, it will be better quality and it'll be done more quickly, etc., etc. But how do you think that happens? That happens because they fucking cut corners. Very rarely, it happens because they have, you know, more funding and a lower pool of quote unquote customers that they have to, you know, reach out to. But it's just this is just another symptom of a way bigger issue, which is the fact that, for example, there is not a nationalized construction sector. There is no
but
proper...
Hakim, then building ugly. Building no look good. Building no look good.
Anybody who's... I wish the worst form of destitution on anybody who ever says, oh, but building ugly, because fuck you. Do you know what? I'll tell you. Do you know what's uglier? Being fucking homeless. Yep. All right? Dumbass. These people, Yanni, I swear to God. By the way, again, these are the same people who live in the fucking copy-paste mixed suburbia, right? Pretending that commie blocks, which, by the way, looking at them 35 years after the dissolution of the Soviet Union, where no maintenance has been done and paint has been peeling for fucking 25 years, and then you're like, oh, it's ugly. Yanni, Rabat, well, I don't know what to tell you. These people are beyond fucking stupid. Look, let's move on to a slightly more positive development, which I'm sure somebody's going to find a way to spin negatively.
Ow, you're rubbing my fucking palms.
All right. Basically, there have been rumblings, okay? Not in the Attack on Titan way, but in a more significant...
Oh, I fucking cringe. Oh, my God. Oh, my heart. Oh, Lord. Oh, I love you so much, bro.
It's not a bad show. It's a fine show. Recent developments have been garbage, fine. But it's not a bad show. Come on.
All weebs get salt mines.
Fair enough. You know what? Fair enough. I think I can agree.
Somebody needs to make one of those what do you call them, the diagrams of like taste between the three of us, because all three of us have like some small stuff that like all of us are like obsessed with and really love, but then have like stuff that with another guy you like, but with the third guy you fucking hate, right?
Anyways, what I'm trying to say is that there is a tendency of discussion towards de-dollarization. What that means in concrete terms is that since after World War II, basically, there was a big meeting that happened in, I believe, 1944, which happened in New Hampshire, in which over 40 countries got together to basically say, how are we going to plan the world economy after the war? And they decided that since the United States is the largest economy on Earth, and of course the United States didn't, of course, use their connections. Have you seen that Soviet post? There's a very good Soviet propaganda poster in which it basically shows UN voting, and it's the United States pressing a button that says, like, yes to vote for something or no to vote for something else. And when they press the button, all, like, the Western Europe and their allies around the world, all of them also vote yes. Like, their arms go up automatically, like a marionette. That's basically what happened. And they decided that, oh, we just so happened to decide that the United States and the dollar will get to basically determine world trade through pegging basically all trade to the dollar. And this had been the kind of the case until the 90s. And then the first people to start discussing possibly breaking away from this was Iraq and Libya, who discussed taking petrol away from the dollar and making a new currency specifically for dealing in petrol. And that got Iraq invaded and Libya destroyed, unsurprisingly. But thankfully, the American empire has been kneecapped since. And as a result, they can't basically fight against as much as they used to this new wave that began mostly in Latin America, very interestingly, but also now also in the Gulf of West Asia. With the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia and whatnot in dealing petrol in the yuan, in the Chinese currency. There's been a discussion between Brazil and Argentina of basically completely moving away from the dollar when it comes to trade between Latin American countries. And this is basically, in the grand scheme of things, isn't going to be some change we're going to see tomorrow or in the next couple of years, but there is a huge shift towards this, which is very interesting. And the biggest development of this is, of course, many countries are starting to reserve have reserves in other currencies aside from the dollar. And of course, everybody has recently mentioned or noticed the fluctuations in the value of the dollar. So we're in for some interesting developments. There's a very decent article actually on this, if you're interested. It's on Al Jazeera of all places, titled Will Russian sanctions dethrone King Dollar, which discusses all this in fairly decent detail. Of course, read with a critical eye, but it is a decent read up.
I couldn't think of a way to negatively twist the downfall of the dollar, except
multipolarity will be imperialist. My God, you guys are just fucking
let us have fun. Let us enjoy the United States stumbling a little bit.
We will fall together with the United States because our Patreon donations are in dollars. So
I wish, Habibi, I would like nothing more than this. Please, please bring down the empire. I don't care.
Write like a 3-page article, some Trotskyist or something, about how deeply the deprogram's interests are embedded with the American imperialist state because we get paid in dollars. Think about it.
I couldn't give a shit less.
Someone in China, reach out. Make a yuan-backed Patreon.
I'm waiting for the G bucks personally. I'm waiting for the G bucks. You know, I've gotten some stuff in the mail, but but no, the usual memes is somebody who's so anti-capitalist that somehow it comes around back to being pro-American empire because everybody else is going to be imperialist too. I guess. I know I'm taking some people out of context in this case, but it is a bit of a meme. And just to bring down everybody's mood again, there's also another decent article that I recommend you read. It's called "You Work Like a Dog, But Each Month by the 10th, Your Pay is Gone." And it's a very long interview with a couple in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, a woman who's a manicurist and a man who I don't remember what he does exactly. But it's just a small family, and they're talking about all their expenses, and there's some graphs and whatnot. And basically, it's the usual thing that you can imagine. Groceries have been inflated in price by 98%. Rent has gone up 80%. General work supplies, for example, for the woman has gone up 100%. Some other stuff has gone up even more. And my favorite part about this is they have at the very bottom a series on inflation, and it's basically people in Ukraine, in Yemen, in Ethiopia, in the UK, in Sri Lanka, in many other countries, in India, and it's all the same thing. It's like the title is like, "If I Rest, How Will I Earn?" We'll be left without a home, struggling, broke all the time, pain at the pump, by the skin of our teeth. Jesus. I can't afford my medicine. Like, I'm just, and this is the market, ladies and gentlemen. This is capitalism. This is the mythology that you've been fed since you were born, that inflation completely decimating entire nations across the earth for the profits of a tiny slither of people at the very top. This is apparently rational. Not only is it rational, but this is just how things are meant to be. Yeah. And this is how things will go on for eternity. And let me just remind you, at one point, people believed in the divine right of feudal kings. So this is not
state
of affairs that will last.
Absolutely. Exactly. Let's drink to a time when we'll look like feudal lords to the future children looked to us.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Inshallah. And most importantly is, we're not liberals. We advocate for actual material change through organizing, through political activity, number one. And number two, unlike liberals as well, we advocate for you reading, educating yourself, do the theory, do the work. Yes, Marxism means you're going to have to do some fucking math. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Okay. But this is just how it is, okay? Anything worth doing requires its price, either in time, in health, in effort, in money, or in blood, amongst other things. Mm. With all that said, again, we're sorry for the many bummers of this episode, but this is just the state of the world. As Gramsci said, something, something, pessimism of the mind, something, something, optimism of the soul.
Love that quote.
We'd like, exactly right.
Something, something.
We'd love to thank our patrons who we couldn't do this without, absolutely.
Thank you for helping us inflate to the US dollar. Serve
exactly,
the empire,
yes,
one
exactly
donation
right.
at the
Praxis.
Time.
Let's fucking go. We have some very exciting news eventually coming. Ooh. You guys will see in a little bit. Ooh, yeah.
Serious.
With all that being said, though, this has been the Deprogram. I'm Hakim.
I'm JT.
And I'm Yugopnik.
Don't shit yourself when you get stabbed.